Hey, it's me, Lars Larson. Thanks for checking out my podcast, and be sure to tell a friend about the Lars Larson Show.
Lars.
Together, we can forge a new beginning for America.
The 45th President of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And yes, together, we will make America great again. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
Now, honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you for Honestly Provocative Talk Radio for America. We are live from Capitol Hill today at Feet to the Fire, an annual gathering of talkers, talk show hosts from around America, about 60 of them, a record number this year. And boy, is it a great time to be in Washington, D.C. on this issue in particular, to put pressure on senators and representatives to enforce America's immigration laws. Heck, we've already been condemned. This event has been condemned by the Southern Poverty Law Center, which means anytime you're condemned by that group, you know you must be doing something right. And sitting right in front of me is the man who's been on this subject, I think, longer than just about anybody else on Capitol Hill, and that's Steve King from Iowa. Congressman, it's good to have you on the program.
Well, it's good to be back again, Lars. And I would say this, that, you know, I may not be a professionalized expert on this, but I did have dinner with Tom Tancredo last night.
And I ran into him earlier today. He's another stalwart on this issue.
He is. He's been a great friend for a long time.
You and I have been meeting on this for years. Years.
Sure
this
have.
Is crazy that we're finally getting to it, and we have a Republican Congress, and it's not getting done. What's going on?
Well, we're working towards it, and we have a sequence of bills that are moving through this Congress. And for starters, tomorrow, three of them are my bills. We combined two of them together. Kate's Law comes as a separate bill.
That gets voted on tomorrow, right?
Gets voted on tomorrow. And so I'll be on the floor debating that tomorrow.
And before we go past that one, explain for people who don't know who Kate Steinle is and the issue that brought about her death.
Kate Steinle was 32 years old, a beautiful brown-haired, blue-eyed beauty in San Francisco with her father down on the wharf when a five-times deported illegal named Francisco Lopez Sanchez fired a gun and killed her. She died in her father's arms. And that's an example. And San Francisco is a sanctuary city. They had released the killer out onto the streets. He was there. He came back into the United States and came to San Francisco because San Francisco is a sanctuary city.
Yep.
So we are going to tomorrow, we're going to address sanctuary cities, and we're going to require what turns out to be an additional sequence of sentencing for those who violate in multiple entries into the United States. And we add to the penalty in some of the categories, extend them from existing law in most every category. And then if someone is out on a parole, if they're released on parole and deported back to their country, say they get a one-year sentence for coming into America illegally, and after 6 months, they're paroled and deported. They come back into America. It's mandatory they finish their sentence. Plus, they'll be faced with a second violation, what Jack set up a couple of years. And by the third violation, it's five, and it goes all the way up if it's violent crimes associated with a 25-year penalty just for the illegal entry. So it's a good piece of legislation. It is a messaging bill, too. And so when we add up Kate Steinle's law with Sarah Root's law, and I just got a nice, wonderful hug from Michelle Root, who lost her daughter, to an illegal alien who had been arrested before. He was on a first-name basis with two of his immigration attorneys in Omaha. Sarah Root was 20 or 21 years old. She just graduated from Bellevue University with a perfect 4.0 grade point average, and her major was in criminal investigation. She would have been restoring the rule of law, and she was killed by a drunken illegal who ran into her, and her father testified before the Judiciary Committee, where I've now served for quite a while, and he said something that was just as powerful as anything I ever remember hearing. He said, they arrested him, and they released my daughter's killer on bond for less money than it cost to bury her, and he was out before we could hold the funeral. And that statement will just echo in my memory for all of my life. But we are fixing that situation, too, and requiring that those perpetrators will be turned over to ICE and they can't be put out on bond. And then into that is the sanctuary cities law That will do a lot to cut down federal money going into cities that defy federal immigration law.
Do you think the cities are taking this seriously? Because I hear mayors, I hear county commissioners, I hear city council members, and even governors who say, we're going to deliberately become even more of a sanctuary place, a city, county, or state, than we have been before. It's almost as though they're pushing back against that, saying, we don't care if you do it.
It's almost like they're playing that Beatles song, Revolution, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't want a revolution, but it looks like they're trying to foment one. And why would you defy federal law? And when you've got all these federal dollars coming into your cities, and you have a president who's made this clear, you've got an attorney general that is clear-eyed about this and as firm as anybody we could ask for. Jeff Sessions is a stellar individual. And when you put those pieces together, if I'm Rahm Emanuel or Bill de Blasio, I would be shaking in my wingtips about this kind of situation and figuring out how I could comply with federal law. And why wouldn't they want to? Their constituents are being killed in the streets.
Well, and the crazy thing is most liberals, I'm talking to Congressman Steve King from Iowa, but most liberals are big on federal laws and federal, you know, overreach into states. You know what they'd say if a state had said, we're going to defy federal EPA laws. Mm. You know what they'd say if we said, we're going to violate federal work laws or any other OSHA laws. They would object to it and say, well, you can't violate those laws. But on this category, they say it's not only correct to do it, but it's the right thing to do. And it's crazy.
Yeah, eroding our rule of law, they think, is a humanitarian thing to do. And here's one today to juxtapose this against. Sneaking into America, breaking into America, violating our laws, committing the crime of unlawful entry into America, and it is a crime, then they want to waive that as if somehow, and I don't want to compare anything to shoplifting because that's wrong too.
Yeah.
And if you're a thief, you're a thief, whether it's $100, a candy bar, or $1,000,000, you're still a thief.
Right.
I got the news yesterday that two egg producers in Iowa have been sentenced to prison. And I'll give their names, Jack and Peter DeCoster, father and son, and they run a large egg operation and they run a sloppy operation. And they had, because of their lack of sanitation, they had salmonella that took a hold in there and they had to condemn a lot of eggs. And it's dangerous. Some people were sick. Nobody died, thankfully. But they got sentenced to prison for their lax way of dealing
with cleanliness.
Right, lax piece of cleanliness. So if you're not raising eggs or raising hens right and having them lay their eggs right, then you can go to a federal penitentiary for violating those federal rules that are there. But jumping the border and coming in here and dealing drugs and these things, that's just simply what people do when they want a better life.
Is there any chance that we can get to something like your Clear ID Act, which says we're not going to let you deduct the wages of wages paid to illegal aliens, and we effectively require all American employers to e-verify? I'd do it.
Yeah, we've there's I think solid support for a mandatory e-verify. That's been worked harder than my new ID Act. And so I'm in this place now where I have medical malpractice done in the house. That's a big load off of me. I just finished it within the last hour. And so that's there is a certain thing that you've got so many things on your agenda that how do you turn your attention? But I'm now poised where I can turn my attention to the new ID Act and start to get some real good list of co-sponsors on it. And what it does for the listeners that aren't listening to Lars everywhere every day, and you should be, is that it prohibits, it clarifies that wages and benefits paid to illegals are not tax deductible, not for your federal income tax purposes. And then it says if you use E-Verify to verify your employees, you get safe harbor. But if you don't use E-Verify and the IRS comes in and does an audit, they'll go down through and look through your employee identification that's on your Schedule C. They'll run that through E-Verify for you. They'll check it with E-Verify. And if you don't comply, they'll say, sorry, this $10 an hour that you paid this illegal, now we need the penalty and interest and the tax, and it turns your $10 an hour illegal into a $16 an hour illegal.
Congressman, I've got a break, but that's the way to get it done. It effectively fines every employer out there who uses illegal labor. He's Congressman Steve King, and it's a pleasure
Thank
to
you,
see
Lars.
You, Congressman.
It is a great pleasure to be
you're
here.
You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Opinion alert. It's Honestly Provocative Talk on the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. We're live on Capitol Hill at the Phoenix Park Hotel with Feet to the Fire, put on by the Federation for American Immigration Reform. And sitting in front of me is, well, the man from the White House. Not Donald Trump, but Sebastian Gorka. Dr. Gorka, it's good to see you in person for a change.
Oh, it's always great to see you, Lars. Great to see you.
So tell me where we are right now. And what are, I mean, you're here on this issue, and we're glad to have you talk about this issue, but you and I usually talk about national security issues as well. Yesterday, a major cyber attack in Europe.
Right. I mean, it's a great week for us in terms of what happened at the Supreme Court. It's a great week with regards to fake news having to pay a price for fake news. But the threats are still out there. We saw the movement by Syria to use chemical weapons against civilians again. We've seen cyber attacks in the UK and elsewhere. So we are committed to keeping Americans safe, and that's why we have Donald Trump is the commander-in-chief.
So, Dr. Gorka, and I won't ask you to do it again, because when I ask you specifics, you say, we're not going to telegraph our plans. I don't want you to tell the bad guys.
We can talk about objectives, but not specifics, because that's bad strategy.
But the objective on Syria is to brush them back. If they seem likely to use chemical weapons again, they do it knowing that the United States will respond.
Right. So let's be very clear here. The statement that came out late at night from the White House with regards to that airbase that we've already hit, let's understand the strategic objective. We are active in Syria for one purpose alone, and that is to crush, as the president said, to obliterate ISIS. We're not there to go to war with Russia. We're not there to go to war with the Syrian regime. Nevertheless, we will take any and all measures required, not only to protect our forces, but also our partners, and very specifically to maintain that red line that the president is unequivocal about. You will not use weapons of mass destruction against unarmed civilians.
Let me ask you about this. When the United States felt it necessary to shoot down a Syrian jet, a Russian-supplied Syrian jet, we were effectively shooting down a Russian jet. And they didn't have, I mean, they had some verbal response to it, but not much beyond that. What does that say about their current attitude toward the current administration of the United States, that they didn't respond in anything beyond that?
Yeah, wonderful point, Lars. I think it says a great, great deal. And it's very much part and parcel of what the president was trying to achieve, not only with the cruise missile strike in Syria earlier, but also with the Moab 21,000-pound bomb that we dropped in Afghanistan. Everybody needs to understand this is not an interventionist regime. The president is clear. We do not invade other people's countries and occupy them. That's un-American. But where we see an exigent threat to ourselves, our partners, or our allies, we will act. And right now, those actions in Afghanistan and in Syria are as much about the detonation of a device as they are about sending a message to other countries that they have to think about their internal red lines. How much is it worth them supporting regimes that are guilty of mass murder? And I think that's the kind of calculation that's going on right now in Kremlin, in Beijing, and elsewhere.
Well, I mean, for all of this fake news about the investigation of allegations about the president and Russia, which has turned up after one solid year of investigation, exactly nothing. And now we're starting to see some of the media hoist by their own petard, like CNN, for purely fake news. When you look at what's happening in regard to that kind of dynamic, this story isn't getting told quite as well, that you're actually getting Russia into a different posture, that where there were folks on the left trying to say Donald Trump is in league with Putin and he's going to go along with everything that Putin wants to do, what he's actually doing is he's brushing back Putin in a way that even Putin doesn't feel like responding to in a forceful way.
This is really important. Let's break this down on two levels.
Sure.
Number one, fake news has collapsed. I mean, think about it. We now have this covert video from the Veritas Project about a producer saying it's all rubbish. It's all generated for just, you know, stats and for more viewers. On top of that, we have three people who are, resigned.
Resigned.
Really?
Fired.
Okay. So that bubble is bursting. But hang on a second. Let's be logical. We're supposed to be colluding with Russia for 5 months with no evidence, at the same time that they accuse us of doing things that mean that we want to go to war with Russia. I mean, is the left-wing media schizophrenic? Are they that much, are they that unable to follow their own narrative? Are we bosom buddies with Moscow, or do we want to go to war with them? You've got to decide sooner or later. So I think, you know, when you see the average, the polling comes out, the latest YouGov poll says 70% plus of the population does not trust the mainstream media. This is the price they have to pay, Lars.
Now, let me ask you about the event that's going on here. This has been going on for over a decade. We've been coming for about a decade to remind members of Congress we want to see enforcement of the law. We want to see a wall built. An American said that very forcefully on November the 8th. I've got to believe that the president is frustrated by that, that he hasn't got the funding yet.
Look, the fact is, let's look again at the realities behind the smokescreen. Thanks to the president's commitment, and he is utterly committed to the wall. This is not a theory or something that will happen. They're already testing out prototypes, designs. Let's look at the sterling leadership of the team that we've brought together. Thanks in part to the leadership of Secretary Kelly. Since January the 20th, illegal migration across our border has dropped by 73%. Not 7%, Lars, not 10%, 73%, and we haven't even built the wall. So that tells you how committed we are. Frustrated or not, we will make it happen.
Well, and about your point about fake news, I remember in the last 2 years of the Obama administration, as the wall was being talked about, I remember seeing a lot of stories from CNN and the others saying why President Obama has been doing a bang-up job on border enforcement, and I thought, how does that square? If you've been doing a fantastic job, the next guy might be able to make an incremental change, the 7% change you mentioned.
Right.
But if you've really been doing a fantastic job, your successor does not come in and achieve 73% reduction. If you've been getting the first 95% of
and,
it stopped.
You're absolutely right, but let's be even more serious about it. If they'd been doing their job properly, if we'd had a real system that worked, Kate Steinle would probably be alive today. That's the bottom line. That's why sanctuary cities, catch and release, all of that has to end just for the safety of Americans in America, Lars.
Well, and when do we start to see the first sanctuary city that suffers a loss of finances through? And I know they have to be related federal grants in most cases,
right.
Law enforcement related. We haven't seen one yet.
Right, so this is the big news of this week. So this is what the White House is going to talk about this week. We are focusing on this question of the large, and I mean significantly large amounts of federal grants that come out of the Department of Justice and the Department of Homeland Security. Basically, the question is, why should you receive that funding if you're a sanctuary city? Because you are not executing federal immigration law to the benefit of criminals, and we're not going to let that stand.
Are we going to see a city or two or three or five or 12 get cut off? Because you know, I make my home and my broadcast studios in a neck of the woods that is solidly sanctuary. Counties, cities, states that say we will oppose efforts. There was actually a bill passed in Oregon this week that said we will forbid state agencies to cooperate in any way. Are we going to actually see some folks cut off?
That is the plan. So we have the No Sanctuary for Criminals Act, H.R. 3003, and that is exactly what would happen. If that bill goes into force, you will not receive federal grants from those departments if you refuse to implement federal immigration law. We have to protect Americans' laws.
Boy, this is such a change from the days when the Obama administration used to sue states like Arizona for having the temerity to try to help enforce. Dr. Gorka, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for stopping by in person.
Pleasure's mine. Thanks, Lars, and God bless.
By the way, tell your boss. If he wants to stop by, Feed to the Fire is going on today and tomorrow. I know he does. He's probably got 10 extra
I'll
minutes
check
in his schedule. See if his schedule would allow him to stop by. We'd love to see Donald Trump, the man who wants to build the wall, come by, who's doing more to enforce immigration law just through the force of his personality at this point, because nothing else has changed. We're live at Feet to the Fire, live on Capitol Hill, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. We are live on Capitol Hill at an event called Feet to the Fire that we've been coming to for roughly a decade. And so I guess I'm one of the fixtures here, but Michael Harrison is one of the other fixtures, the man who publishes Talkers Magazine. And, of course, I think this is one of the largest gathering of talk show hosts.
Oh, definitely. This is a record breaker. I think there are about 60 hosts here. It's amazing. They did a great job of pulling this together.
So good that the Southern Poverty Law Center has condemned the entire event, and they condemned it yesterday before it even started.
Oh, wow. That's a badge of honor. Huh?
I think so.
Certainly. And here you have the luxury suite again, I see. You are more than a fixture. This is the best. There's a bunch of tables, folks, you know, and chairs and couches and things. Lars has the best place in the entire operation.
Michael, I think that what happens is they figure all this padding will soak up a lot of the loud because I'm loud. But I want to know what you think.
Well, me?
I want to know what you think of what goes on here today. And about the fact that we broadcast back to our audiences, but we also encourage them to get involved in what's going on in Capitol Hill. Do you think it makes any difference?
Yeah, I think it makes. Of course, it makes a difference. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a First Amendment to protect it. If it didn't make a difference, I'm here because of the First Amendment. I support this event. This event has been attacked by people that want to shut it down. Right now, with President Trump in power, it's changed the nature of it. It's brought it out into the above ground as opposed to the underground. It's not in the shadows anymore. It's a mainstream issue, and I guess that's a good thing. But my reason to be here. People said, how come you're involved in something that's so incendiary and such a politically explosive issue and so controversial? Because I, frankly, for the people listening, I try to stay out of taking partisan positions.
And you do. You've done a very good job.
Yeah, I mean, somebody's got to just protect the forum, the platform for everybody to be able to speak. The First Amendment, I mean, you're a big Second Amendment guy, but you can't have a Second Amendment if you don't have a First Amendment. You realize that.
Yes.
The First Amendment is the foundation of what we consider to be America, American freedom. So if the First Amendment goes, the rest is just hyperbole.
I mean, public discourse doesn't happen without the freedom of average folks to take a position and know that they won't be molested or assaulted simply because they believe something different.
Won't be arrested or killed. Legally, by the government. Now, the First Amendment doesn't protect you from boycotts. It doesn't protect you from nasty letters. It doesn't protect people from razzing you, hating you. I mean, people, that's their First Amendment right. But it protects you from the government arresting you for your political position or killing you or fining you. And that is so important that Americans take for granted.
And you only have to go 90 miles from Florida to find a place where that does happen on a regular basis.
It even happens at our allies. It happens in Canada. It happens in England. It happens. The First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America is rare. It's
look what happened to Mark Stein. Right? Mm-hmm. Mark Stein, who's somewhat in our business, but, he writes a lot and he just fills in for other hosts. And he got put on trial in Canada because he said things that folks in Canada said, well, that's an attack on Islam. Well, I can attack Islam if I want to.
Right.
I don't choose to attack it as a religion. I attack the actions of some of its adherents from time to time for their actions, but not for their religion.
Now in Canada, it's against the law to call a him a her. Or think if you make a mistake, or if you just say it, I couldn't say, hey, just amongst us girls, expressions that are used. It's against the law now.
Well, think how that's changed. Michael, you and I are both old enough. I stayed up to watch the very first episode of Saturday Night Live. And in its early years, one of their favorite little bits to do that they brought back from time to time was Pat, the person who all these folks worked with, and nobody could figure out if Pat was male or female. Do you notice? I don't think they're going to run that in reruns
anymore.
Could
you imagine? Yeah. They'd have to shut the show down. but you see, I defend their right to do. I would defend their right to do anything other than to directly. People say, well, what about crying fire in a crowded theater? Well, it all depends on the situation.
Now, you've got to get into modern times, Michael. The new way to express it is shouting Allahu Akbar in a crowded theater.
Well, exactly. You're right. That's hot fire. That's very hot fire, I tell you. But the First Amendment is untidy. It's messy. There's no clear demarcation. It requires a thing called abstract thinking and intelligence. And it requires goodwill. And that's what we need to have in this country.
And the liberals' favorite word, tolerance. Because can you tolerate somebody saying something you disagree with?
I will not tolerate intolerance. Haters, I hate them.
And haters got to hate, Michael. Players got to play. Whatever. I'm trying to be hipper these days at age 58.
Us hipsters have to be hip. It's very difficult being hip. I'll tell you. I work very, very hard.
Well, see, I enjoy reading and listening to the other side. I get a kick out of it. I check into a hotel like this for an event like this. We come in later at night, and I turn on MSNBC and see what they're saying. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean I have to agree with it, but I would never suggest shutting them down.
But you need another side. Otherwise, you'd be very dull. What if there wasn't another side? What would you do for a living?
Gardening
tips? I mean, come on. I mean, we're all so tied into we're all one nanogram away from being hypocrites. It's hard being a human being. I mean, it's harder than being hip. It's hard being a person in this situation that we find ourselves called being human. The human animal is a very strange species. On one level, we are deeply independent. We have a sense of individual, of self. I am me. I think, therefore I am myself. On the other level, oh my God, I'm away from my iPhone. Or if you're in prison, we're going to throw you in the hole, boy. You're going to be in solitary confinement. No, I'd rather die. I mean, solitary confinement is considered torture.
Being isolated from fellow human beings.
Exactly. So that is the, you know, the dichotomy, the conundrum that we face. We want to be individuals, but we can't be individuals alone. So, and that's all of politics, the individual's rights versus the collective. And my view is that this is nature's way. So when you say the other side, be happy there is another side, or you wouldn't have the whole cause for you to do what you think is right.
That's right. By the way, I'm talking to Michael Harrison, who's the publisher for many years of Talkers Magazine. I got a professional question for you, though. I'm wondering, after the most recent to-do in Atlanta, is Art Bell writing stories for CNN these days? I mean, I know he's gone away from the mainstream of talk radio, and I thought maybe they've hired him to write crazy stories, because Art was the best at making up crazy stories and believing in crazy theories, and I thought maybe he's got some side work down in Atlanta.
No, but CNN is generating so much new dynamics in terms of polarity.
But they're making stuff up, Michael.
Well, at least they confessed that they did.
And they fired some people.
Right.
They got caught.
Well,
do you think if somebody in that newsroom had said, hey, this whole story is fake, but nobody's realized it, so just move along?
But that's the case with everybody. Don't you love when people are caught?
I see the error of my ways. I'm sorry. I'm going to change my way. But if they weren't caught, they wouldn't see the error of their ways.
I got to tell you, Michael, I come on the air probably once a week and say, okay, I got this wrong, and I would rather correct it before somebody calls in to correct me and say, hey, you got that wrong, and I have to say sheepishly, yeah, you're right, I got it wrong. I'd rather do it myself. I'm convinced they would not have said a word if Breitbart hadn't called them out.
Probably not. And you're a good man if, in fact, you would confess to something that you were wrong about if you knew you can get away with it. That's a mark of your character. And there's no joke attached to that. We've been kidding around a lot. But there's an underlying truth to all of my kidding. I mean, I know this is not a comedy show. I'm just, after having done 18 interviews, and I'm spacey as heck, I'm trying to make, you know, this at least interesting. But the fact is, no, there's a tremendous amount of hypocrisy. And most people, politicians particularly, when they're called out, they suddenly see God. You know, what happened before that?
Michael Harrison is published online at talkers.com. And, of course, publisher of Talkers Magazine for so many years. Michael, thank you very much.
Thank you, Lars. A pleasure.
You bet. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is a pleasure to be with you live from Capitol Hill at Feet to the Fire, an event to remind members of Congress that they have to make sure that America's immigration laws are enforced and that we actually keep our country safe. I want to change gears here just a bit. I'm going to ask the folks back at the studio in Portland, Oregon, if they can line up that sound bite from the piece of video that James O'Keefe from Project Veritas obtained of a CNN producer. We'll go to that in just a second. Hold it up for right now, but let me bring on James O'Keefe. James, it's been a while since you've been on the program, but it's a great pleasure to welcome you back. Thanks so much for taking the time tonight.
Great to be with you.
So you obtained, Project Veritas obtained, video of John Bonifield, a CNN producer, admitting what?
Well, Bonifield admitted that their Russia narrative is complete and total BS. And he says that the CEO of CNN relayed the message to him, this is the senior producer from Atlanta, that they need to stop focusing on the stories that he was doing, the serious journalism, and focus on Russia in order to make money. And he says a lot of other things in the state. He says that Trump is right. He says that it's a witch hunt. And he's saying all the things that we suspect to be the case, but he's proving the point. And then today we released a video on Van Jones, the CNN anchor pundit person, saying basically the same thing, that Russia is a, quote, nothing burger. So there's a sort of Greek chorus of voices at CNN all saying what we suspect to be the case, that it's all fake news. In their words, BS for ratings.
James, I just want people to hear it so they know we've bleeped out the word, the Bernie Sanders word that
right. You
can't say. Let's go ahead and play that audio if you don't mind.
Then why is CNN constantly like, Russia this, Russia that?
Because it's ratings.
Because it's ratings?
Our ratings are incredible right now.
But honestly, you think the whole Russia is just like bullshit.
Could be bullshit. I mean, it's mostly right now. Like, we don't have any big, giant proof.
Now, here's a man admitting this to James. Does he think that this is a fellow broadcast professional or journalist? But he's admitting it out loud. Does that surprise you?
Does it surprise me? No. Listen, the great thing about this tape is John Bonifield is being honest. John Bonifield is like you or me here. He's almost naked in his honesty. He's so transparent about the way the culture works at CNN. He doesn't know he's being recorded. I can't get into every detail about who and how and where and why, just like the Washington Post and New York Times, they don't disclose anything. They just give you anonymous sources, so we have no idea what's going on. But at least you can see and hear what he's saying, and you can know that he's telling the truth. And CNN actually has come out and verified that he has said what he said, and they've stood behind him because they don't have a choice. They can't fire the guy. He's being honest. So there you have it. For the first time in modern history, we can actually go behind the scenes and actually capture the real motivations of who these people are and why they do what they do.
What does that say about CNN as a news organization, that they not only are practicing that kind of journalism, knowing that it's BS, but it generates a lot of ratings, and so much so that a CNN producer is willing to admit it out loud to somebody who's not one of his colleagues? This isn't talk going on inside their shop. This is a guy talking to somebody from outside of CNN that apparently, since he's one of your operatives, he likely doesn't even know very well.
Well, that's a testament to the talent of our journalists, our reporters, our undercover people, those relationships with people. We draw them out. We get them to trust us so they can admit these things they otherwise wouldn't admit to people that they did not trust. But the second part is we've reached a boiling point in this country. The CEO of CNN, who sets the culture, he's the CEO of the company, he establishes the culture, it's reached such a boiling point where their own staff, including Van Jones and their senior producer in Atlanta, their own staff is fed up. They said, I can't even do journalism. After the Paris Climate Accords, this producer says in the tape, he does not know he's being recorded, he says, after the Paris Climate Accords, the CEO of CNN says, stop talking about that, let's get back to Russia. And he says, it's all for ratings. And the producer also says he's lost all hope for journalism. He says it's, quote, adorable to think that journalism is about the truth. He says it's all business with no ethics. So the mainstream media now, well, that's just an isolated incident. Well, that's why I released part two. And then there's part three. And then there's part four. And, Lars, this is what we have to do. We have to not only release the truth, we have to expose the media in the process.
Well, James, look, I've been in this business a long time, and I don't think it's adorable at all. In fact, you know that as much as I can every day, I bring the things to my show that I think are the most interesting. And I love telling people outrageous things, but only if they're true. because I'm not a guy who writes feature films or novels or thrillers. I do a radio show, and I'll tell you my personal standard is I'm not going to put anything on the air that I don't believe is true. And there are some times where I've held back on stories, maybe to my detriment, because I said, nah, I just don't know enough about that one to really, and that, or that one doesn't ring true. And sometimes I'll find out later, yeah, I could have gone with it. But the idea that there's a whole group of people within one of the largest news organizations on the planet right now that's effectively saying, yeah, we can sit and make it up, and as long as it's interesting and we don't get caught, it's fine. In effect, it doesn't sound like there's a dime's worth of difference between CNN and the National Enquirer or the Worldwide News.
I mean, I agree with all the comments. I think we're reaching a tipping point in this country where the citizen media is no longer David. I think we're now Goliath. I think people are going to stop trusting the mainstream media. And what does that mean? What is the prediction? It just means that the mainstream media is going to do more of what they do, and people are going to stop trusting them. And if people stop trusting them, it's a good thing for democracy, because evidently, based upon what we've exposed, evidently, we shouldn't trust them, and we can make informed decisions on our own. But the media, I mean, we are taking the beating heart out. We have put our hand in their body and ripped out their beating heart right now. That's what's happening right now. And they're circling the wagons, and the New York Times, the Washington Post just did a hit piece on me, and they're now going to retract because they lied about me. But this is a war. I mean, we are fighting a war of truth versus propaganda in the modern era, and because we believe that people should be informed, and they believe people should not be informed. They don't trust people with raw information, because raw information brings one to conclude the wrong policy outcomes that they don't want to have. So this is a war, and the only solution is hidden cameras, because the only solution is reality.
Yeah, I'm with you, because I mean, it almost reminds me, there was a feature film not long ago with Glenn Close in it where she says, if we allow people to choose, they choose wrong. And I think that seems to be the attitude, whereas I have the belief that people will make dumb decisions, but it's not for me to make the decision for them by lying to them and telling them information that's not accurate in order to influence the outcome of that decision. James, congratulations and great work at Project Veritas. Thanks so much for the time tonight on the program.
Thank you, Lars.
Glad to have you on. James O'Keefe from Project Veritas. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarsen.com. I will never put something on the program knowingly that I know isn't true or even suspect isn't true. You can visit our website at LarsLarsen.com. Vote in the quick poll and follow me on Twitter.
The Lars Larsen Show.